Barbarian Tribes of Rome, the Anglo-Saxon Customs. Now, early on, I talked about how the fact that we knew little of the Anglo-Saxon gods and most of what we knew about their contemporary sources was secondhand information. As such, it is difficult to talk about customs local Anglo-Saxon people partook in and a level of certainty. However, the archaeological remains and even linguistic clues do provide us with a few potential scraps of information. By far the most direct evidence of Anglo-Saxon customs lies in how they perform their burials. Throughout the years, archaeologists have unearthed many grave sites dated all the way back to the 5th century. Some of these sites include the Pritwell Royal Tomb, Sutton Hoo, and Sponge Hill Cemetery site, Fordcroft, and Buckland. Each of these sites offers researchers a wealth of artifacts which hint at the status of the buried individuals, their potential religious beliefs, their sex, and sometimes even cause of death. At Spawn Hill, we find 2,316 different burials, of which only 57 were found to be inhumations. The rest were all cremations, whose sheer number may suggest that several towns used this area for burials. The practice of cremation is usually linked to pre-Christian cultures, considering that the church didn't allow this practice in those times. Knowing that, we can safely assume that early Anglo-Saxons, prior to conversion, had the habit of cremating their loved ones when they passed. But inhumations aren't exactly a custom that only Christians did. In fact, early pagan societies also had the habit of burying their dead without burning the bodies. Knowing this further complicates dating grave sites like the ones at Spong Hill. After all, Anglo-Saxons might have had different burial customs separately before migrating to the island. Luckily, there is a way to distinguish Christian inhumations from pagan ones. As England became more and more Christian, rulers and priests got more modest funerals. This is not the case with the pagan rulers, and we don't have to look at the Anglo-Saxons to know this fact. Even early Sumerians buried their dead with a wealth of material goods, as did the Egyptians and even early European societies. While there are differences regarding their methods and amounts of material that were buried with the body, generally speaking, these cultures believe the person being buried took the objects with them to the afterlife. Anglo-Saxons surely held the same standard. In other words, a warrior being buried might need swords, daggers, shield, and armor in the afterlife, but he also needed gold, food, and decent clothing. Sometimes the burial would be somewhat extravagant, as is the case for the nobleman buried with his horse at Sutton Hoo. In Essex, a child's grave was exhumed and it had a dog buried next to it, suggesting that the animal was the pet of the child. Other times they would get very extravagant indeed. Again, we look to Sutton Hoo for this. Namely, in 1939, the archaeologists unearthed an entire ship at the site. That ship contained an enormous number of items, some of which were elaborately crafted, like the shoulder pads, the purse lid, golden buckle, and the famous Sutton Hoo helmet. Obviously, the person buried there had to be of the highest status in the contemporary British society, most likely a king. Historians believe that Raywald of East Anglia, who ruled the same kingdom from 599 to 624 CE, while the burial itself has definite pagan elements to it, Raywald converted to Christianity in the early years of his reign. Of course, if this burial site really is his, and he did convert to Christianity, that raises further questions regarding the wealth and the nature of the tomb. Unfortunately, we can't tell much about the burials of common folk from these findings. However, we can assume which gender roles men and women had at the time. For example, most male graves were exhumed contained knives and spears. These finds suggest that the men were expected to be hunters, farmers, or warriors. Anglo-Saxon women were usually buried with sewing items, weaving tools, meaning they were in charge of making clothes. It should be noted that both genders had examples of elaborate, wealthy funerals, which is why some of the scholars speculate that early women held power to some extent. So that's what we have when it comes to burials. But what about actual religious practices of the Anglo-Saxon? Is there any way we can know what they performed in their rituals? How they worshiped their gods? How this played into everyday life? Sadly, the best evidence we have, again, relies on secondhand written information and early stories. We say sadly because while these bits of evidence can be a good source of information, we still need concrete examples of Anglo-Saxon worship and customs. If we don't have these, all we have are educated guesses. So let's look at the guessing. Several place names in Britain suggest animal sacrifice. Gateshead, Worms Heath are two such locations, with their origin names meaning goat's head and snake's head. In Old English, we even have written records of animal sacrifices occurring in early English kingdoms, although kings began to outlaw the practice in the 7th century. There were even locations where animal carcasses were found buried alongside groups of human bodies. Most of them were oxen, but a few heads of pigs and boars were also unearthed. Sadly, we can't say for certain if these animals were buried during a sacrificial ritual or if the Anglo-Saxons simply buried fresh meat with the body of the deceased as food for the afterlife. While animal sacrifices might have happened back then, human sacrifices in Anglo-Saxon times is still a topic open for debate. There is no clear evidence of ritual killing of humans. What we do have are 23 Sutton Hoo corpses that seem to form a circle around an area where a tree used to stand, as well as the corpse of a woman at Sewerby, which might have been buried alive with her husband. Both of these claims are contested by scientists and historians, so it's hard to say if they truly represent human sacrifice or not. Much like everything else about their customs, we barely know anything of the pagan Anglo-Saxon priests. Bede mentions them in passing, and archaeology hasn't yielded anything conclusive. There were corpses that were identified as male, but who wore elaborate female-looking outfits, which would suggest a priesthood. We do know that the people believed in witches and magic, considering the Christian ruling class tried to outlaw them in the 9th century. If Anglo-Saxon pre-intentional church rules and regulations from 1680 are to be believed, priests had issues with locals still venerating sacred trees and pillars. However, within the writings of the priest Aldhelm, from this period, we don't get a clear reference to these pillars. He does call them crude pillars, but he also mentions that they have heads of stags and snakes on the top. Many scholars believe that Aldhelm wasn't talking about actual totem pillars, but rather real animal heads on top of spikes. Either of these fit well with Germanic customs from continental Europe, so they wouldn't really be out of place in Anglo-Saxon England. Even as late as the end of the 7th century, one detail does stand out from Aldhelm's description of these practices. However, namely, he praises the fact that most of these sites that were sacred to the pagans still living in Britain were turned into Christian holy sites like churches. The reason this is interesting information for us is that if the Anglo-Saxons worshiped their god by venerating tall trees and even wooden poles, it would be very easy to convert these spots into Christian sites. In the case of the trees, all church officials would need to do is establish a new church building right next to it. When it came to amassing pole, an additional horizontal pole would be enough to make them into a cross. So that leaves us with all we have on those types of customs. So next time, we'll be looking at the social structure of the Anglo-Saxons, which we have a little better idea of what that will look like. And then we'll head on into the early Christianization of the Anglo-Saxon. Now, the sources for this, The Germanic People, Their Origin, Expansion, and Culture by Owens, Attila the Hun by Worrell, The Burgundians by Charles River, The History of the Ostrogoths by Burns, and The History of the Vandals by Jacobson, as well as The History of the Barbarians. So I hope you enjoyed that. And as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.